Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
I'm Stephanie J. Block.
And I'm Mary Lee Fairbanks.
And we host Stages Podcast.
Binge close to 100 episodes.
Hear the inside stories from backstage and behind the scenes as we go beyond the resume and into the heart of creativity and what it really takes to be in the business of show business.
Don't miss our chats with the season's Tony nominees. If you love theater and entertainment, you are going to love Stages Podcast.
Subscribe to Stages Podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts and visit us at stagespodcast.net.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
So excited to be here with Lindsay Hicks, and you know you're a legend when you just have one name, Moby. I mean, only needs one, Moby and Lindsay Hicks. I am so happy to have you guys here. Welcome. Thank y'all for joining me.
Oh, my pleasure.
How's it going?
Generally speaking, you know what's funny? It's such a good, nice, lighthearted question, but what I've found over time is it's such a hard question to answer. Especially like during the pandemic, I would be doing interviews or talking to people and be like, hey, how's it going? I'm like,
do you want me to lie or tell you the truth?
I'm like, well, I mean, contextually, like there's an apocalypse happening and, you know, the rainforests are on fire and people are getting in fist fights in parking lots over parking spaces. But personally, like I just went for a hike and I feel fine. But then the question is like, okay, are we allowed to feel okay within the context of a world that seems to be tearing itself apart?
You asked that on your Instagram. You said an honest question, and you basically kind of said that in the caption, like, are we allowed to feel okay when the world is on fire? I struggle with that really difficultly. I struggle with that. Tell me how you guys are navigating that, because it's like, you can't not have joy in your life, because if you just have only pain and suffering too, then who's going to help bring people to the joy? You've got to show joy. You've got to keep that alive. You've got to aim for joy. But it's like, sometimes it's hard to do that when there's so many awful things happening. How do you navigate that?
Well, I was reminded during the pandemic of, and I'm going to sound like a cliched sober person, but I was reminded of the Serenity Prayer, you know, and the fact that like, in the middle of the pandemic, friends of mine in New York or in China or in London who were locked down in, you know, tiny apartments, and they were cold and they were battling illness. And I had just gone for a hike and I was drinking organic tea and sitting outside in the sunshine in Los Angeles. And I was like, am I allowed to enjoy this knowing that other people are suffering so much? And what I sort of said to myself was, my misery doesn't affect their suffering at all. Like there's nothing I can do in this moment to change what they're experiencing. So what benefit is created by me not enjoying nice circumstances? So it was like, you know, the Serenity Prayer of, you know, accept the things you can't change. And I'm like, well, I can't really change the fact that, you know, my friends in New York are in tiny apartments and are miserable and cold and dealing with illness. So how in the world does compromising my own enjoyment of being outside, drinking organic tea and going hiking, how does that make things better? And the truth is it doesn't. So that at least hopefully that's not just like an entitled, privileged justification, but that's what I sort of tried to tell myself during the pandemic.
Well, and I think I have come to that same conclusion because I literally, right before the pandemic, I had a daughter, and I am a major empath, like a super emotional being. Like y'all probably are this way because y'all are such huge activists and supporters of people and animals whose voices aren't always as loud or heard. But it's like, I feel everything. When I walk into a room, I feel everything. So when the world started to like shut down and all this pain and suffering became so visible and everyone, it's just, I felt exactly what you're saying. Like I literally, and then my hormones were out of control because I just had this daughter and I'm bringing this kid into the world. And I'm like, oh my God, like, I think I'm like, my nervous system is breaking down. So like, I had to get on antidepressants for a year. I just had to like, it took me like 3 years to recalibrate that because my nervous system kind of freaked out because it feels like the world's ending. But I have come to that same conclusion, and I felt everything and I was so sad for everything. But I came to that conclusion that you just said, it's like, if I completely shut down and just feel all the pain and suffering in the world and just feel it, but I'm not doing anything besides feeling sad, then I'm actually not helping raise the vibration or consciousness to a higher level and find joy. So it's like what you guys do is y'all are huge activists and you've been this for a long time. So that to me is the answer. It's like you have to figure out how to enjoy your life, but then figure out where you want to use your voice and give your heart and attention and platform to it. That's the answer, I feel.
I think
for Lindsay, I don't want to, I apologize for talking over you, but you just reminded me, because I really want to hear what you have to say. But Caroline, you just reminded me of something that was told to me when I first got sober. This old timer, because I got sober in New York at what was considered a very low bottom AA meeting. It was on the Bowery and it was filled with like elderly drunks who'd been sober for decades. And when I first got sober, this old, old guy who'd been homeless, weirdly enough, he'd been a divinity student and a minister. And then he discovered drugs in the 70s, became a homeless person, and eventually got sober. And he was this happy, contented, wise man. I think he was in his 70s then. And he gave me this one piece of advice that made so much sense, which is, and forgive me if I'm stating the obvious, but that self-care is a form of service.
I get that now. I finally understand that. I totally agree with that.
Like, we're no good to anybody. I'm sure we all know ourselves and other people who basically destroy themselves and as a result are not available to help others.
And, agreed.
You know, whether it's depression, anxiety, illness, physical pain, what have you, like if you're battling these things, you're certainly of no use to anyone else.
That is so true. So to actually do what you need to do to get your healing and your self-care is a huge service to the world, because the goal is for all of us to get that self-care and for all of us to be healed. So some of us have to start and show the way, you know?
Yeah. Lindsay, what do you think?
Well, I was just going to say that I really think leaning into those feelings, and when you feel bad or you feel worried, to go inside and kind of make yourself feel bad or worse, it feels like you're doing something. It says, your brain says, I'm feeling bad for the other people or beings or whatever that are feeling bad. And it's a little indulgent. I've done it before where I'm like, if I can feel their pain for them, with them, then that feels like I'm doing something.
That's huge service. You're a martyr.
Well, just taking on their pain, but it doesn't actually move the needle in any way outside of yourself. So exactly what Moby's saying, if you can figure out a way to look outside, what can I do? Is there some action I can take that could actually make the world better? Is there someone sick that I know that I could just give them a phone call? Is there some way I can show up as an activist? Is there anything that I can do? And it actually changes your entire or at least for me, it shifts my entire perspective, just one small action.
Totally. I totally feel that. And I think that that is the big distinction that I feel like this conversation is highlighting. And I've come to the conclusion too, is that you have to take care of yourself. And we got so overwhelmed because we see everything because we're so, it's so available. And I think we've all learned that about social media, especially with the pandemic. It's like you see everything and you feel everything, but it's like everything is not ours to, the load is not ours to carry. We can't carry everything. You can only help where you feel called. So that is why I am so, or where it is in your life that you can actually impact and take an action for. I am so impressed with what you guys are doing, because y'all are so, so, so deeply rooted in your calling to protect animals and the environment. And Moby, especially for being a superstar, it's like, I've interviewed a lot of famous people and a lot of stars, and people are so many wonderful people doing huge things with their platform and following their dreams and their callings like you have, but you are one of those people who music is just like, I just feel like you are music. That is you, that is who you are. That is your innate being. But it's like, you say this too, like your actual calling, you're so talented at music. You're a worldwide legend, but your true calling and heart is animal, saving animals and like being a voice for animals. And that's not always the case with superstars, you know? And I feel like you, it puts you in a whole different league and mindset.
Well, it's funny because for a while I really wanted to be as selfish as I possibly could.
And what did that look like?
In the early 2000s, because I had never expected to have a career as a musician. I thought I was going to be a philosophy professor.
Really?
And make music in my spare time that maybe someone would listen to. But for the most part, I thought I was going to be an obscure musician who never had any success. And then in the 90s into the 2000s, I started having surprising levels of success.
Like you weren't trying to find it. You weren't trying to get it. It just happened.
Yeah. I never expected it for a second. And all of a sudden, you know, like my most successful album Play, I recorded in my bedroom. And, you know, the first show I did on the tour for that album was to 30 people in the basement of a record store. And then it just kept selling and ended up selling 12 million copies, which is sort of unprecedented for a record that you make in your bedroom.
Why do you think it resonated? What connected?
The only thing I can think of is that it stood out from everything else because no one else was making records in their bedroom that way. Like it, everyone else, like, you know, whether it was the Backstreet Boys or Britney or Eminem or Limp Bizkit, like everyone was spending millions of dollars going into huge studios. And I made a very sort of intimate lo-fi record in my bedroom. And somehow I think that ethos, that approach made it just stand out to people. But then what happened to your question, and I'm a little ashamed of this, but I actually learned a lot from it. I bought into that world of like going to red carpet events and, you know, at one point having my own tour bus with an assistant whose pretty much only job was to throw parties for me. Like it was, I went fully down the selfish rabbit hole.
But you know what? Why not try it when you had the access of it being available? You know, it's not like you were doing anything wrong to have that kind of lifestyle. It just was what was unfolding. I don't think there's anything wrong with trying it if you're not harming yourself until you realize maybe you are.
Yeah. And also, I made the mistake that so many of us make is I thought that externalities could fix my issues.
Right.
You know, I thought that the love of 100,000 people in a stadium was going to be the love that I needed, that good reviews in a magazine was the validation I needed, that, you know, and not surprisingly, it didn't work. And I kept bottoming out, doing more drugs, drinking more. And in 2008, I finally got sober. And I was reading an interview with the Dalai Lama that annoyed me so much because he was talking, and I'm not a Buddhist. I'm not really, I don't know what my belief system is, but he talked about the importance of service. And I started hearing people in 12-step meetings saying the same thing, like you have to be of service. And that idea irritated me so much because I didn't want to be of service. I wanted to be selfish. But if I looked at the evidence, I realized that my selfishness was paradoxically not making me happy.
Wow, that's some deep thinking. That's some deep diving.
But it was also just the evidence was so overwhelming. You know, like I kept buying fancier things and I kept going to fancier places and hiring fancier people. And the more I spent, the more I partied, the more I tried to be selfish, the less happy I was. And I was like, oh, huh, I guess that doesn't work. Maybe it would work for someone else, but it didn't work for me. And so sorry for the long-winded answer, but it's the question then became,
fascinating.
You know, if the selfishness, the materialism and the selfishness simply wasn't making me happy, what do I do? And I just thought, okay, let me try to be of service. Let me try to have values that are hopefully not selfish. And the irony, the paradox, is by pursuing activism, by pursuing, you know, animal rights activism, climate activism, that activism makes me so much happier than degenerate selfishness ever did.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. That's a really wonderful question. Because I've accepted that, you know, being of service and trying to have a good spiritual life and being healthy, like this is the key to happiness. But it really is a wonderful question. Why is that the case? Because you would think that selfishness would lead to happiness. You know, I mean, it works for lizards. You know, I don't see lizards running around trying to help other lizards. Like they're trying to like eat bugs and eat other lizards. Like they're, I don't know what about our neurochemistry, what about our heredity, you know, like makes us hardwired almost towards finding gratification through service and through altruism. Sorry for rambling on so much.
But I love this What's your take on this? This is an issue that I'm obsessed with too. My whole journey with this podcast that I started 6 years ago was to interview amazing thinkers like y'all and to ask these questions to figure out what is true happiness. Because here you are being a rock star, biggest rock star in the world, but like you realize that that is a wonderful thing to see your talent and your dreams and your passion expressed and received by the world. But like, that is not how you get true happiness. And so to talk to people who understand this, who have lived it, and then to actually find the true happiness, that is inspiring. That is like a true guide. And so I would love to hear your take on this, Lindsay, because you're so deeply rooted in like, you're a producer and an actor, right? Mm-hmm. In a creative.
Sometimes, yeah.
You produced his movie. Is that how y'all met?
Yeah, no, we've been friends for years. And a few years ago, I was working at a kind of big TV production company. And during the pandemic, I was having this conversation with Moby of, I want to do work where I feel like it matters in a bigger way, where it moves the needle toward a world where less people are hurting animals every day, where everyone is making decisions that make for a more sustainable planet. Something that makes me feel like I'm doing something good, as opposed to, you know, developing the next junior cupcake baking championship on, you know, and wherever. So
although I will say, Lindsay, sorry to jump in, but like some of those junior cupcake baking shows can be pretty satisfying. So
I mean, they really make me happy.
Look, they're really, really fun, but there's a limit to how much of that, you know what, yeah. I mean? But I do believe that content, as you know, Caroline, content can be so meaningful, incredibly meaningful. I mean, we were just talking about this yesterday, like soft power is real. Creating culture is how you create real change. So I do believe in content. And for a while I was working with for Wanda Sykes' company and making so much stuff that featured gay stars or, you know, people of color in ways people hadn't seen before. And that was incredibly meaningful. But I was talking to Moby about that, how I want to shift more into doing, making content like that and working on that side of things. And a few weeks later, he was like, well, why don't we work together more formally? And so then I came on, I helped finish Moby Doc. And then he had shot some interviews for Punk Rock Vegan Movie, and we kind of finished that together, which came out, which premiered at Slam Dance last January. And is now for free on YouTube for anyone that wants to watch it.
Everyone needs to watch it.
Moby felt very strongly that it should be free as his offering, as a form of activism. So I'm very happy that it's so accessible globally. It's a beautiful thing. And we've also done, we made a short called Why I'm a Vegan about Moby's journey to being a vegan. He's been vegan for as long as I've been alive, and has been an activist for as long as I've been alive. So I've learned a lot from him and how he works and his perspective on what matters. And Moby is prolific as a musician, but also as an activist. He's just constantly doing anything that he can. And I'm trying to bring that into my life as well, because he's just kind of energizer bunny level of activism in music. So I'm really trying to support him in that, because I have so much to learn, but also trying to develop my own perspective on how I could be a better activist, human being, supporter of people being better versions of themselves. Because I believe that if you're suffering, people that are suffering or struggling for very basic things will have a hard time being of service and extending that out. So happy people matter, because without happy people, you don't really get happy animals, happy planet.
Hey fam, I'm Simone Boyce.
I'm Danielle Robay.
And we're the hosts of The Bright Side, a daily podcast from Hello Sunshine that's guaranteed to light up your day.
Every weekday, we bring you conversations with the culture makers who inspire us.
Like our recent episode with Hollywood royalty Regina and Raina King. We talked about the creative power of women's relationships.
I feel like, thank God for women, like, especially when it comes to Black women, the way we lean on our mothers, our grandmothers, our sisters, our friends. We're just each other's pulse. I mean, it's molecular, you know?
Listen to The Bright Side from Hello Sunshine on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of On Purpose. On Purpose's mission is to create impactful conversations to help you become happier, healthier, and more healed. This week, I talked to Tiffany Haddish in a hilarious, deep, thoughtful interview where we dive into family trauma, grief, sobriety, love, and dating. You'll be laughing, crying, and have so many impactful takeaways after this interview.
I had this, like, you know, homie lover friend for a long time. He's very disrespectful to me, very kind of messed up to me. But in my mind, we could get married. We had the most beautiful babies. He handsome. I'm pretty. Like, it would be so cool. He's smart and intellectual. I'm kind of smart, I think. Like, it would be fun. We have the best conversations. Like, we have fun, but then he would treat me like crap.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss this one.
Imagine you ask two people the same exact set of seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including actress and star of the mega hit sitcom Friends, Courtney Cox.
You can't go around it, so you just go through it. This is a roadblock. It's going to catch you down the road. Go through it. Deal with it.
Comedian, writer, and star of the series Catastrophe, Rob Delaney.
I shouldn't feel guilty about my son's death. He died of a brain tumor. It's part of what happens when your kid dies. Intellectually, you'll understand that it's not your fault, but you'll still feel guilty.
Alt-rock icon, Liz Phair.
That personal disaster wrote Guyville. So everything comes out of a dead end.
And many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
So kind of, if you guys could, since this is so near and dear to both of you guys' heart, and I am so interested in this, I'm so inspired by this. It is very hard, in my opinion, it is very hard to be so committed to your activism like you guys are, because you have to have hard lines all over the place. You know, it's like the world is coming at you constantly, trying to tell you that we're going to not embrace the way that you're choosing to live. It's not mainstream. It's everywhere. People are not supporting animal rights all over the place. You can see it. The world is not necessarily trying to make animal rights the number one thing. So when you are an activist, you have to just stand in that belief all the time. You have to have such a strong core and such a strong power about you to hold that, when I feel in my mind the world is making it, could make it very difficult. And it's such a huge cause and it's such an important issue, but it's not convenient for the world to be vegan. It's not convenient for the world to be an animal activist driven country. So it's like, when you guys are taking this huge stand and using it for your whole platform, Moby, and you have it tattooed on your arms, animal rights, and it's just like, you know, making this movie and making both these movies, taking this huge stand and going up against all the criticism that's going to come with it, that is so inspiring. So I would love to know, what is the gist of the movie? What is the gist of these documentaries? I would love to know what inspired them. And I didn't know that in the rock world that you're in, Moby, it's a huge activist. It created so many activists. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, I mean, that anchor that you're describing, it's a great question, because I also don't understand it. I don't know how much of that is, for example, me looking at the world and rationally rejecting the things that are worthy of being rejected and trying to promote or accept the things that are worthy of being promoted or accepted. How much of it is that? How much of it is hereditary? You know, how much of it is coming from my family or my upbringing? Because I was, and this, I'm not even saying this is a good thing, but I was raised with this idea that principles are more important than accommodation. You know, and that, it's just an ethos that was instilled in me as a child. Like, accommodating a culture that you don't respect is a borderline like sin, you know. Like, to look at, I mean, you have to be in the world, you know, as they say in the New Testament, like, be in the world but not of the world. And but that sort of like my unshakable belief, for example, in animal rights, like, I just simply can't be involved in anything that would cause animal suffering or contribute to animal suffering.
It's not even a stance. It's just your body, your whole makeup won't let you do it.
Yeah. And I'm so grateful for it, because there's no room for self-pity there. You know, there's no room, like, I can't really feel sorry for myself. When I look at the suffering that's out in the world, I'm like, oh, my suffering is nothing compared to the suffering of all these innocents. So I'm very grateful for that, because it means, I mean, but it also makes me potentially really annoying.
And I don't think it's annoying.
It's definitely compromised my commercial appeal. Like, the musicians who do the best are the musicians who are completely apolitical and are just interested in self-promotion and don't want to do anything to alienate anyone. But historically, those people are also not that interesting. Mm-hmm. You know, if we look back, like, who do we want to base our lives on? And I'm not comparing myself to, let's say, you know, a John Lennon or a Gandhi or, you know, Martin Luther King Jr., but the people who had these unshakable beliefs and adhered to their beliefs and their principles and we're unwilling to compromise, those are the people where I'm like, oh, that's inspiring. That's a good use of a life, as opposed to people who compromise here and there to get by and maybe make things a little easier. I wouldn't judge the people who do that, but I certainly would not be inspired by them.
So we're born into this world and it's sheer chaos from the beginning, you know, and especially now there's so many things coming at us. There's so many things that you just start eating. Like, you know, you're given McDonald's or like bacon or all anything when you're born to like, you don't even start getting a conscious awareness of how you even get this food until maybe your teen years, you know? And so then it's like, you have to like unlearn everything. You have to go actually find the truth, which is so hard to find because there's so much sorting. So when did, that's why having guides like you guys making these amazing movies, music, documentaries, we're all looking for the guide, you know? And I feel like that is, it's so hard to get all this information because you have to sort through so much. So when someone like you guys offers it up, it's so incredibly helpful because you're such a trusted source too.
Well, you're absolutely right. And it's such a fascinating and terrible paradox. I mean, because I grew up like everyone. I grew up eating McDonald's and eating Burger King and eating pepperoni pizza and, you know, loving junk food. You know, I loved any type of greasy meat junk food when I was growing up. But I also loved all of our rescue animals. You know, I lived in a house filled with rescued animals, and it never crossed my mind that loving animals unconditionally was inconsistent with loving Burger King unconditionally. And then when I was 19 years old, I had the epiphany. I was petting a rescue cat named Tucker, and I suddenly realized, like, oh, I would never want to hurt Tucker. And Tucker has two eyes, a rich emotional life, and a central nervous system, and a desire to avoid pain. And in that moment, this was 1984, I realized, oh, all animals have a rich emotional life. All animals have two eyes and a very basic desire to simply not suffer. And so that was when I went vegetarian, and then I went vegan in 1987. And if you think being vegan now is challenging, in 1987, it was being a vegan was so weird. No one even knew how to pronounce the word vegan. Like, was it vegan? Was it vegan? But for some reason, I don't know why, like once I went vegan in 1987, I never looked back. Like I was willing to compromise other things, but that was the one unshakable thing that has irritated my friends and family so much. Like the number of times family members or friends have been like, just have a piece of cake. Come on. It has eggs in it. You're not going to kill a chicken by having a piece of cake. And something in me is just like, okay, I can't. I don't know why it's so binary, black and white for me, but it has been now for 36 years.
So is that how you're wired? When it clicks, when something clicks and it's the right moral code to do, it's like non-negotiable anymore. You're like, I already know the truth. Like there is no gray zone. This is black or white. And like once you get it, there's no going back.
My belief, and again, the world is a complicated place. I've made terrible choices in my life. I've done terrible things, but my question has always been, this is my ethical binary question is, am I hurting myself or am I hurting others? And I've had no problem hurting myself, you know, with drugs, with depression, with alcohol, with anxiety, et cetera, but I could never hurt other people or hurt other beings. Like that was the sort of, and I almost feel like our entire ethical system is based on that idea. It's like what you do to yourself is your own business. What you do to other sentient beings is not your business. Like you have to respect the rights of other sentient beings. And for some reason, that's just my very simple ethical code. Lindsay, I know you've wrestled with this as well.
Yeah, well, I went vegan in 2006, in San Marcos, Texas, which was also
very tricky.
People didn't understand. I mean, I didn't really understand it, but I was having one of those nights where I was having insomnia. I was in college. I was stressed. I didn't know what was happening.
Lindsay, you had insomnia?
In college, I had bad insomnia. I don't anymore. Wow.
So Caroline, to put it in context, I have seen Lindsay fall asleep anywhere and everywhere. Like, you know, like she's one of these miraculous people. Like if you put her on a metal grate in the middle of a festival with 100,000 people, she'll have a good night's sleep. Like, so
you're that peaceful in your spirit. That's amazing.
Well, I wasn't always. I don't know if it's peace or just like anemia. I don't really know, but but so I was having one of those nights where I was just up, my mind was going crazy. And so one of the things that I would do to try to fall asleep would be to go on the internet and just start learning about things I didn't know about. And that would sometimes like lull me, get me to a place where I could actually sleep. And this was one of the things that I started looking into as like, I want to look like vegetarians. I guess that's a thing. I don't really know who does it, but that's something that has happened in this world. And I started looking into it and it changed my life. Cause I just didn't know. I was kind of under the assumption that the meat that came in the box was just, you know, the animals die naturally on a happy farm. And then, you know, they do a little prayer over the cow and like gently take a little burger bit and put it into like, I never really thought that much about it because we're not supposed to. The whole system relies on us not thinking too much about it.
Yes.
And once I watched videos of how terribly these animals suffer their entire lives, the emotional anguish, the physical torture, like how terrible it is for them and how terrible it is for us and how terrible it is for the planet. And I was like, I probably shouldn't do that anymore. And from that night on, my perspective was changed. I did everything I could to like find things I could eat. And astonishingly, there was a health food store in San Marcos, Texas that I went to and they actually had like vegetarian meatballs. And I was like, didn't know that was a thing, but great. And I shifted my life around because of that. And it's only been more affirmed again and again and again throughout my life. And in fact, when I moved to LA, as happens to many people that move to LA, I met many energy healers.
I love energy healers.
They would all tell many of them, not all of them, but the ones that I got along with best would say that after they kind of made the shift into making this their life, they couldn't eat meat anymore because they were like, I could taste the pain. I could feel
because you're suffering. Ingesting that from the animal.
Eating a lifetime of torture. You're eating cells that have experienced so much pain in their very, very short lives. And they could feel that, so they couldn't do it anymore. And that was another thing that affirmed it, you know, further.
And one thing, but Caroline, one thing I want to say, because I agree with everything that you guys are saying, but I also have to assume that there are quite a lot of people listening who are not vegan or not vegetarian or maybe not concerned with animal rights. And I want to be super clear that we're not judging or condemning anyone. Like,
right.
They're like, I don't think that, you know, I don't feel like I occupy any high ground that gives me the place to judge, because when I was growing up, as I mentioned, I was a teenager in the suburbs who ate garbage. And if anyone had judged me, I would have just become defensive. So just have to be super clear to people who are listening is like, we're not judging. We're just talking about our perspective. And I think that there's, and maybe I'm really stating the obvious, but in the world of activism, there can be a tendency to come across as like super strident. I know I can be very strident. I can sound very judgmental. But I think, you know, like when Lindsay was telling her story, she wasn't talking about judging other people. It was very clear. She's talking about her own choices. And I think it's so profoundly important to communicate with people, to have respect for the people we're talking to, even if they disagree with us, because the people we disagree with most today might be our best friends tomorrow, might be our allies in a week. And so, sorry for rambling on about
this. I love that. It's a great point.
Super important to remind people that, like, this is a conversation. It's not a condemnation.
Totally.
It's all personal choices. Like, I have to do every single day I make decisions. I have to choose what is the right road for me and what is the thing that's going to make me feel bad. And it's just the choice that I continue to make because I know it makes me feel better. And I know that the other option will just, it doesn't work with my system anymore.
Well, and that's what I like to focus on in this podcast is I have done so many different types of healing for myself. My whole goal in life is to heal and to show others the way. Like I like to call myself like a tortilla chip. Like I feel like I am the vessel between like the awesome wisdom to the people. Like I want to share all this knowledge of how to heal yourself because I think what you guys are saying to me, how I'm perceiving what you guys are talking about with animal activism, being vegetarian, vegan, and really thinking about what you're eating and consuming and the process and the system, it's just awakening. You know, all we're doing is just waking up and waking up and waking up. And I feel like a lot of people have so much on their plate. They were born into such a high stress, high trauma, high whatever situation that they haven't even gotten to get to a place to think above survival. And as soon as you can start getting above your own basic survival, which some people really do just have to survive. And when you're in that zone, you can't think of probably about animal activism. You know, it's like you don't have the bandwidth to go there yet. So it's just like every different level that you can awaken and heal yourself a little bit, you get to a higher level of thinking where you actually can sustain it maybe. But that's why it's so great for people like you guys to show us the way. Because people can get their interest sparked all the time. They can think in their heart. Like I know for me, when it comes to like vegetarianism and veganism, I love animals. I have done stints in my life where I've gone vegetarian, wanted to go vegan, but like I just couldn't quite get it all to click for me. But I'm awakened to it and I think about it and I love to learn about it because you never know when it's going to click for you, when you can actually reach that next level if you feel called to do that, you know?
Yeah. And one of the things Lindsay was alluding to that makes our type of activism so fascinating and just dynamic is I'm a vegan because I love animals and I don't want to cause suffering. But one of the consequences of that is my diet is now a million times healthier than it was when I was out eating McDonald's. And, you know, I've become obsessed with reading about nutrition and reading about all of the sort of like, honestly, miraculous healing properties of plants, you know, whether it's beans, whether it's walnuts, whether it's fruits and vegetables and berries and seeds, like they're phenomenal potential for healing. And in the process of like, we heal ourselves, we avoid creating suffering. And we help heal the planet because I was talking about this with Al Gore recently, that the third leading cause of climate change is animal agriculture, meat and dairy production. So it's this, I've heard people call animal activism the Swiss Army knife of activism because it does so many things. Like you save animals, you save the planet, you save yourself. It's really kind of almost like a magic trick.
But also, if you want to be a masochistic vegan, come talk to me because I'm very good at getting the junkiest vegan food that will, if you want to still be a vegan and not hurt animals, but still feel like shit, I'm your gal.
Yeah, Lindsay self-identifies as a raccoon vegan because she basically, sorry, Lindsay, but you've said this, like you do love some deep fried vegan garbage.
Oh, yeah. Hey, you know, I think if you eat it and you love it, it goes down with the love, you know?
Sure.
You gotta have that intention.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of On Purpose. On Purpose's mission is to create impactful conversations to help you become happier, healthier, and more healed. This week, I talked to Tiffany Haddish in a hilarious, deep, thoughtful interview where we dive into family trauma, grief, sobriety, love, and dating. You'll be laughing, crying, and have so many impactful takeaways after this interview.
I had this, like, you know, homie lover friend for a long time. He's very disrespectful to me, very kind of messed up to me. But in my mind, we could get married. We had the most beautiful babies. He handsome. I'm pretty. Like, it would be so cool. He's smart and intellectual. I'm kind of smart, I think. Like, it would be fun. We have the best conversations. Like, we have fun, but then he would treat me like crap.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss this one.
Imagine you ask two people the same exact set of seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including actress and star of the mega hit sitcom Friends, Courteney Cox.
You can't go around it, so you just go through it. This is a roadblock. It's going to catch you down the road. Go through it. Deal with it.
Comedian, writer, and star of the series Catastrophe, Rob Delaney.
I shouldn't feel guilty about my son's death. He died of a brain tumor. It's part of what happens when your kid dies. Intellectually, you'll understand that it's not your fault, but you'll still feel guilty.
Alt-rock icon, Liz Phair.
That personal disaster wrote Guyville. So everything comes out of a dead end.
And many, many more. Join me on season three of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
Hey fam, I'm Simone Boyce.
I'm Danielle Robay.
And we're the hosts of The Bright Side, a daily podcast from Hello Sunshine that's guaranteed to light up your day.
Every weekday, we bring you conversations with the culture makers who inspire us.
Like our recent episode with Hollywood royalty Regina and Raina King. We talked about the creative power of women's relationships.
I feel like, thank God for women, like, especially when it comes to Black women, the way we lean on our mothers, our grandmothers, our sisters, our friends. We're just each other's pulse. I mean, it's molecular, you know?
Listen to The Bright Side from Hello Sunshine on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So, Moby, you so casually mentioned you're just chatting with Al Gore. I always am so fascinated when people of your caliber, just that's who you run with. You just run with, like, presidents. You just run with people like, you know, like yourself and Bono. And you could probably just call Oprah Winfrey if you wanted to or whatever. It's just, like, no biggie. What is that like? Is it just, like, that's just your running group? That's just your peer group? Does it feel normal? Does everyone feel normal? Well, is it just bigger problems? Is it bigger excitement? What is it?
One of the things I'm actually incredibly grateful for is, you know, we live in a culture, and I'm stating the obvious, but I like stating the obvious. So we live in a culture that glorifies fame and wealth and celebrity and, you know, and luckily I've been able to experience these things firsthand. And, you know, I've met and hung out with everyone, you know, from Al Gore to the Dalai Lama to Bono, you know, like on and on and on, heads of states, rock stars, movie stars, etc. And what I can say is,
but you didn't just meet Moby, you're a peer. That's what's so cool. These are your peers. Okay, so go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, Al Gore and I've had brunch together. Yeah. You know, like, it's, and what I will say is, most public figures, most incredibly well-known people I've met, and I'm not all of them, but a lot of them are actually a little less interesting than my friends.
Explain.
Because I'm sure, Caroline, I'm sure you've experienced this. Public figures bring a sense, not always. Al Gore, I'm going to exclude for this because he's just a saint and delightful. But I'm sure you've met lots of people where, like, the fact that they're a public figure makes them less interesting because they're so entitled, because they're so self-involved. And so weirdly, like, the smartest, funniest, most interesting people I've ever met are absolutely not public figures. So at this point in my life, if I'm being honest, I kind of make an effort to not hang out with rock stars and movie stars because my regular friends I grew up with are just smarter and funnier.
I get that. Yeah, because it's like literally it's just going to a lot of the time it's such a huge production just to be a superstar that you kind of have to think about just all the things you got to do to stay keep it all going. Is that right? Is it just because they're just always you are your brand?
And also, yes, you're absolutely right. And I'm sure you've experienced this as well, where like a lot of entitled celebrities, they sort of feel like just showing up is enough. Like they don't necessarily have to make an effort to ask questions or, you know, be interested in what other people have to say or be funny or be insightful. They're just, they sort of feel like their presence alone is enough. And in some cases it is, you know, like some of these huge rock stars and movie stars, when they walk into a room, like they don't need to do anything other than show up, and it's profoundly exciting, but it doesn't make it a lot of fun to like go out to brunch with them or hang out with them, because a lot of them just don't have that much to say, because they, and if they do say things, as I'm sure you've experienced, they tend to just talk about themselves, and it's just not that interesting. So I'd much rather go out to dinner or go out to brunch with some friends of mine from college or high school than with a gaggle of movie stars or rock stars.
I actually
get a chance to hang out with RuPaul. Do it. I learned that.
Oh yeah. Ru is amazing. There are the exceptions. Ru is the most interesting, entertaining, delightful space alien of a human being. Like there are some people who are truly miraculous, but then there are a lot of people who are just kind of tedious and entitled.
I often wonder this, and I'll wrap up soon. I'm sure you guys have other things to do. I love talking to great minds like yourselves who are just like literally grasping these concepts and then applying them to your life and then turning it into art and sharing it with the world. It's so amazing. I do wonder this, as someone who, Moby, when you performed and done all of this putting yourself out there, how do you protect yourself from all the energy coming at you? I have recently learned, and I relate to you a lot, Lindsay, with energy healers. I have an incredible energy healer named Gabby. She's the miracle medium on Instagram, but she's literally like showed me that stuff can get stuck in your body. Like it can get stuck in your body and people can put their energy on you. And if you don't know how to protect yourself from it, it can like you're even talking about with the animals, all the life of fear that they have. It's like, you can receive all of this energy from everyone who thinks about you, and it will come on you if you don't know how to protect yourself. So like how, being a superstar, how have you protected yourself, like shared your talent, what you came here to do, shared your gift, but like not gotten so overwhelmed or sick or like basically like, you know, it hurts. It can hurt you. All that energy can hurt you. How do you protect yourself?
It's a wonderful question. And and I really love and appreciate the focus that you put on healing, because I do think, to state the obvious, that so many of us ignore the things that are destroying us and ignore our healing, because, and this is very self-evident, but I don't think it gets enough attention. Our bodies are machines of healing. You know, the body exists to heal. Like, It just wants to heal. Like, you know, one of the things I actually love doing is thinking of the times that my body has healed itself. You know, I recently was hiking and I fell down a mountain and kind of sprained my ankle very badly and got all cut up. I'm healed now. That was 2 weeks ago. Like, my hand was covered in blood. Now I can't even figure out where the cut was. And so I'm in awe of that energy of healing. And it's everywhere. It's in plants, it's in animals. There's something encoded into DNA that just wants to heal. And I have to personally, to your question, be aware of the things that inhibit that. You know, they're the obvious ones like cigarettes, alcohol, drugs, chemical, McDonald's, etc. You know, like the things that are clearly harming us. But for me, one of the biggest challenges, and I have a feeling this is for everybody now, is the opinions of strangers. You know, like it's media. And I have to be aware, like when I sit down with my phone to look at Instagram or sit down at my laptop to read the news, I have to be like, okay, this is media. This is pixels. And if as a result, I don't really read comments. I don't read reviews. I don't let myself
get other people's energy.
By affected by the opinions of strangers. And especially, and I have to remind everyone of this, oftentimes like the trolls on social media, you know, the people who are writing negative comments, turns out they're not even human. They're bots at a Macedonian cube farm. So I've had, Caroline, I don't know if you've had this experience where I know people who've had intense Twitter feuds with someone they found out later was just a bot coming from Macedonia.
And it's just activating that anger energy.
Yeah. So it's remembering that. And there's a simple, basic question that I constantly have to remind myself of is, what's actually going on? Like, not what's going on a screen. You know, right now, what's going on a screen is wonderful. Like, the three of us are having this really wonderful conversation. But like, if I'm looking at a news story that makes me mad, how has that basically taken over myself while I'm ignoring my home? I'm ignoring my refrigerator filled with food. I'm ignoring the trees outside. I'm ignoring the birds and the squirrels. I'm ignoring all these things that are normal and healthy, and letting myself be hijacked by a tiny little screen on a phone. And I just have to constantly remember that.
And now it's so common. We're so hijacked 24/7 that we don't even realize we're being hijacked by everything. And then we're destroyed.
And I know, Lindsay, I know you, like everybody, you struggle with this as well. I mean, it seems like every person on the planet who has a phone or electricity struggles with this.
Well, because we're all a version of public figure now. We all have lives that we're sharing with people in the most impersonal way. You know what I mean? We've all become versions of ourselves that are telling a story about ourselves for people to consume. And that is, the human brain is not wired for that. The human brain is wired for connection. And I think that we've tricked ourselves into believing that social media is connection. And I think there are ways that it can be, but there are a lot of ways that it really isn't, where it can be so harmful. And I think that we're coming for a bit of a reckoning. I mean, all of these reports are coming out about how the more time you spend on social media, the more likely you are to struggle with serious depression and anxiety. And I think as time goes on, we're going to start seeing the effects more and more of what it does to kids, what it does to people of any age. I actually just, with my therapist this week, she was like, well, let's try something. Let's try an hour after you wake up and an hour before you go to bed. Just don't touch it. Don't touch social media. Don't look at it. Even if you're trying to check messages, even if somebody sends you a link for something, like, just don't. And see how it helps. And I've been doing it for like the last, I don't know, 4 days. And I've already experienced some ease and a little bit more peace. You know what I mean? Before I go to sleep, read a little bit of a book instead of looking. And it's a total game changer. Moby's very, very good at phone hygiene.
Well, I feel like Moby's good at everything hygiene. When you decide it's not serving you, Moby's like, nope. Nope. Okay. That doesn't serve me. Okay, great. I'm going to cut that out. And it's just done. You know, it's just easy. Not easy, but you have a switch. Well, I can tell. Like, you just like, that doesn't make sense to do that.
Regarding hygiene, to be fair, I could probably bathe a little more often.
You like that earthy smell?
It's one of the consequences of like living alone. And like, I go hiking and like, there have been some periods where I've recognized like, oh, I am starting to smell like a homeless shelter. Maybe it's time to like up my personal hygiene game a little bit.
Hey, if it's not bothering you though, then that's good.
I think I smell great, but then every now and then I'm like, oh boy. Yeah, maybe it's time to make a little more of an effort to be less offensive around other people.
Hey, I like, just throw a little, what is it? Patchouli on top of it and you're good to go.
Yeah, but really, man, I smell like the deadheads I knew in high school.
Oh, it's great.
Hey, fam, I'm Simone Boyce.
I'm Danielle Robay.
And we're the hosts of The Bright Side, a daily podcast from Hello Sunshine that's guaranteed to light up your day.
Every weekday, we bring you conversations with the culture makers who inspire us.
Like our recent episode with Hollywood royalty Regina and Raina King. We talked about the creative power of women's relationships.
I feel like, thank God for women, like, especially when it comes to Black women, the way we lean on our mothers, our grandmothers, our sisters, our friends, we're just each other's pulse. I mean, it's molecular, you know?
Listen to The Bright Side from Hello Sunshine on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of On Purpose. On Purpose's mission is to create impactful conversations to help you become happier, healthier, and more healed. This week, I talked to Tiffany Haddish in a hilarious, deep, thoughtful interview where we dive into family trauma, grief, sobriety, love, and dating. You'll be laughing, crying, and have so many impactful takeaways after this interview.
I had this, like, you know, homie lover friend for a long time. He's very disrespectful to me, very kind of messed up to me. But in my mind, we could get married. We had the most beautiful babies. He handsome. I'm pretty. Like, it would be so cool. He's smart and intellectual. I'm kind of smart, I think. Like, it would be fun. We have the best conversations. Like, we have fun, but then he would treat me like crap.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss this one.
Imagine you ask two people the same exact set of seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including actress and star of the mega hit sitcom Friends, Courteney Cox.
You can't go around it, so you just go through it. This is a roadblock. It's going to catch you down the road. Go through it. Deal with it.
Comedian, writer, and star of the series Catastrophe, Rob Delaney.
I shouldn't feel guilty about my son's death. He died of a brain tumor. It's part of what happens when your kid dies. Intellectually, you'll understand that it's not your fault, but you'll still feel guilty.
Alt-rock icon, Liz Phair.
That personal disaster wrote Guyville. So everything comes out of a dead end.
And many, many more. Join me on season three of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
Okay, so I'll wrap up because I don't want to take all y'all's time. I could literally talk to y'all forever. There's a lot of creativity bubbling out of you guys. Lindsay, I would love to hear about the birth of the Moby Pod with you guys. And then Moby, if you could just kind of tell me about your incredible album that's out. Oh my God, it's so amazing. And the artwork's so incredible. It's just such an experience. And I know you have a record label and like just so much. So I just want to talk about the cool things that people can get their hands on with y'all.
So Moby Pod is, so I've been running Little Walnut, which is Moby's production company. I mean, obviously we kind of, it's this thing that we're doing together and we've been putting out so much stuff. But one of the questions we always have is, where do we put all of these ideas? I mean, Moby is a pretty consistent spring of creativity ideas.
I get that.
All of this stuff. So we're like, what do we do with it? And we were like, oh, a podcast, obviously, because there's no rules. We can talk about whatever we want. If he has an album coming out, or if there's something interesting that happens in music land, we can talk about that. If there's an amazing person we want to talk to about their approach to creativity or activism or whatever, we can talk to them. It's kind of this open blank slate that we can use for whatever we want and connect with people directly that are engaging. And it's been a really, really wonderful platform. We have episodes coming out every other week. We have one coming out this Friday and every other Friday. So yeah, it's been a beautiful place to kind of, it's a little grab bag.
So we're basically like cracking open Moby's head, looking around in there and just grabbing this conversation today, this one tomorrow, like whatever is just living in there is just getting shared. How cool is that?
It's been very
and of course, as a self-involved public figure, I love being on the receiving end of attention. But I have to say, Little Walnut, our production company, and Moby Pod, even though my name's on it, these are, Lindsay runs the production company and she is absolutely 50%, if not more, of what we do on MobiPod. So it's not, you know, again, I have narcissistic tendencies, so I like receiving attention, but to be in the spirit of full honesty and disclosure, like, it's very much 50-50. Like, when we're booking guests, when we're figuring out what to talk about, like, it's, we're coming up with it equally together. And to sort of, to your point earlier, and by the way, before we say goodbye, I just want to thank you for what you're doing, because, like, the spirit that you bring to this, you know, and the ethos that you're bringing to your podcast and what you do of being honest about struggles, being honest about healing and therapy. Like, it's really inspiring. So, you know, it's been wonderful talking to you and thank you.
Receive that. Thank you. Thank you so much.
And, but one thing I sort of realized regarding music and content and activism and everything is, as time has passed, I've stopped seeing music as a job. You know, I make tons of music. I release tons of records. I started a couple different record labels. I just made two albums with an orchestra, but I make it because it's a refuge for me. It's what I love. And it's been kind of a wonderful transition to recognize, like, oh, music is my spiritual life. It's my refuge. It's not a job. And if it makes money, that's fine.
Whatever music you are making is where you feel spiritually in your moment. Like, you're like, it's like all over you and you're putting it out. Like, you get, you're an open channel because you're getting all of this music all the time, complex sounds, but you just feel it. Is that what happens?
Yeah. And being in my studio working on music, you know, what you were talking about earlier is like, how do you protect yourself from the world? And I think there's a neurologist who's also a meditation teacher named Rick Hansen, who I really love. And he prioritizes this idea of refuge and healing. Like, where do we find refuge? And I find refuge with friends. I find refuge by hiking and being in nature, but also being in my studio. Like, when I'm working at night, I close the door and it's like a little monk's refuge. And so it's been a really nice transition, recognizing like music is no longer my job. It's a refuge. And
really? That's crazy to be, because like, you're still a superstar, but you just don't view it as like, it's what does that feel like to not view it as your job anymore?
It's liberating. And it also means I don't have to do the stuff that I used to think I had to do. Like, I don't go on tour. You know,
you just don't like the tour?
I don't like the tour. I don't like the ego stroking that comes from that.
Do you like the live audience aspect, or is that, or no?
What I love is the connection with an audience. Like, Lindsay and I recently did a live MobiPod where I played music, and it was an invite only crowd of about 40 or 50 people. And I just played acoustic guitar with a cellist. And that was so much more satisfying than standing on stage in front of 50,000 people, which might be hard to believe, but God is my witness.
Why do you think that is?
It's the connection. It's the honesty and the sincerity. You know, Lindsay was saying this earlier, like, as a species, we're built towards connection. And when you're standing on stage in front of 100,000 people, it's interesting, it pays well, it's good for the ego, but there's no connection.
You don't feel like they're connecting through you with the music you're singing?
And also just connecting to individuals. Like, when you're playing a tiny show to 40 or 50 people who didn't buy tickets and were invited to be there, you can look them in the eye, you can talk to them, you can connect to them as humans. And that's the reason I don't tour, is because I'd much rather, you know, sit in my backyard and play Neil Young songs on acoustic guitar with a few friends rather than, you know, just be another touring musician standing on stage living in hotels.
You know, these people need you, Moby. Your music has changed their lives.
Yeah, as long as I don't have to go on tour, I'm happy to release music. But like, the thought of...
Okay, fair.
Yeah.
Yeah. So... Yeah, the thought of doing that does not give you calm vibes.
No, I would do anything. Like, here's a funny little story. I think it's a funny little story, and Lindsay's heard this. The last time I was supposed to go on tour, I was dreading it so much that I spent the 2 weeks beforehand hiking in a part of Los Angeles where I knew there were rattlesnakes, I'd get bit by a rattlesnake, because I knew that if I was bit by a rattlesnake, I could cancel the tour for a good reason.
Stop!
Sadly, I did not get bit by a rattlesnake. I don't want to put that out there because I'm okay not being bit by a rattlesnake, but like, I had to go on tour.
But what a funny little thought that you walked into. Like, if a rattlesnake would just bite me, that would be the way.
I was like, I need some unquestionable, legitimate reason to not go on tour. And so I intentionally went hiking at dusk in parts of the park where I knew there were rattlesnakes. And, you know, for better or worse, they ignored me and I ended up having to go on tour.
Was it okay?
I would rather stay home.
Okay, so that was kind of it. You're kind of like, okay, I think I'm going to pause that. You guys, y'all are so amazing. I always wrap up with one question. And Lindsay, I'll start with you. It's called, I always say, leave your light, which is basically very open-ended. What do you want people to know?
What do I want people to know? Wow, there's a lot of things that I would love for many people to know. But I guess what I want people to know, and it's something that I have learned over time, is to know that you always have a choice, that what you were brought up with or what you learned before doesn't have to be the thing you continue to do. You can always change. You can always pivot. You can always make yourself a different version, a better version of what you want to be and how you want to exist in the world.
I love that. And you don't have to drag it out forever. You can make a choice and change. Like, you can change immediately if you want to.
Yeah.
It's
you can do it at any point for any reason.
You can make the choice to change.
Yeah.
I love that. It feels so overwhelming. It feels like we're not allowed to change sometimes, but we really truly are.
It's not, we're hardwired to stick to the blueprint that was made when we were like, and never question it, and, you know, question everything and change whenever you want.
Love that. I love that. And I love that you're using that spirit and putting art into the world to show people how to change and what it looks like and what needs to change. Like, so thank you for all your contributions to opening our eyes and letting us have useful, creative information that we can actually, it can hit people and help them to elevate. That's huge. It's art changes the world. I really believe it's the artists that change the world. Moby, and I don't think you actually ever talked about your new album. So leave your light and tell us about your album. What do you want people to know?
Oh, well, the album, it's called Resound NYC, and it's the second orchestral record I've made, but it doesn't sound like a traditional orchestral record. It's basically,
it's amazing. It's a movement. I was like, oh my gosh, this is incredible.
Yeah. So I made the first one a couple of years ago that was called Reprise, and it's a way that I can like revisit some of the songs from my past with amazing guest vocalists. I mean, like everybody from Gregory Porter to Kris Kristofferson. I mean, you're in Nashville, so obviously Kris Kristofferson is one of the patron saints. And working with these amazing vocalists sort of revisit some of my older songs. But in terms of Leave Your Light, I mean, I love what Lindsay said, and I love what you guys were just talking about. The one thing I'm going to say, and I'm going to try and say this in a way that hopefully makes sense and is helpful, is a few years ago, I was having an argument with someone. And, you know, and I was really not at my best. Like I was, you know, maybe this like 10 years ago. And I was like angry and arguing. And the person I was arguing with at one point looked at me and said, like, how, like, what part of your spiritual life is reflected in this?
Ooh.
And it stopped me in my tracks because I was like, oh, none of it. Like, meaning, my spiritual life, my spiritual aspirations were to be compassionate, to be forgiving, to be honest, to be non-judgmental. But in that moment of anger and rage, I was the opposite of everything I aspired to be. And so I try, as hard as it is, I try to constantly remember, like, okay, is this who I want to be? Is this in keeping with my spiritual aspirations and my practical aspirations? And so I would challenge everyone to say, like, who do you want to be? Like, if we want to be compassionate, forgiving, loving, honest people, we need to hold ourselves accountable when we're not, and be aware. I need to be hold myself accountable when I'm not being that person. And so that's what I just like to, I'm almost saying that to remind myself, but maybe there's something there that other people can get benefit from.
It's also like when you're in the most intense moment, that's when you have to check into your values and core beliefs the most, because like you said, yeah, it's easy to lose ourselves in those moments of anger, rage, or whatever feeling we're feeling. But like, actually, if you are trying to walk your spiritual walk, it's those moments that really you test yourself. That's such a great perspective to remember for people listening. When you feel yourself about to like go hard for the anger or whatever it is, like, check in.
Yeah. And it reminds me, a friend of mine, he summed it up that for the longest time, he defined himself as a good person. And so when he did bad things, he never held himself accountable because he was like, oh, but I'm a good person. And then at some point he realized, oh, guess what? Like, good people don't do the things that I'm doing. And it was a huge wake up call for him, like that he was trying to justify things like, oh, well, if I cheat, if I steal, if I lie, if I do these things, it's okay because I'm a good person. He realized, oh, guess what? I'm not a good person. Like, I want to be a good person, but my actions need to reflect that.
I'm just going to wrap up. I just had like a moment though. It's like when you reach this level that you guys are in and talking about and sharing with the world, it's like, it's almost like this is how you become Dalai Lama-ish, monk-like, all of you rise up, because you have had so much awareness of the world. You have seen so much, lived so firsthand, understand the hiccups, the potholes, the distractions, the lies. Like, you've been able to see firsthand, get above it as a super celebrity, to get above the system, to actually look down on it and see what is happening, the puppet strings being played. Not many people get above the system because you have reached such a level of success and power. But it's like when you realize that, like, yourself, and you start clearing your energy and clearing the things that, like, the switch, you turn it off. As soon as you realize it's bad, you turn it off, you turn it off, you turn it off, you elevate, you elevate, you elevate. That's when you get to this level of wisdom and clear channeled, because you actually have filtered yourself. You know, so many of us are stuck in the debris of life because we're just in the big middle of this giant chaotic mess, but like, we haven't been able to see the full picture and get above it. But like, that's so cool that that's your journey, and that you are sharing from that perspective of this high elevation, and you've done the work to actually clear your channel with all the debris that life throws at humans, and aligning with you, Lindsay, and y'all making this art. It's really powerful, because that's a hard journey to get that kind of clarity and that cleaning of the spirit, to get to that spiritual cleanliness that you're living at. That's a really hard, long journey that very few people get to, in my perspective.
Well, I hope that everything you said is true. And if it's not, I'm going to aspire to get to what you just described, because it sounds beautiful.
Well, it's awesome. And I just appreciate the work that you guys are doing and giving to the world and being such great guides. And this is a true honor and privilege to get to talk to you guys. So thank y'all so much for coming on Get Real today. And everyone check out the Mobi Pod. It's so awesome and so fascinating. And the movies, okay, the movies are, it's the Mobi.
Oh, it's Why I'm Punk Rock Vegan Movie, which is free. Mobi Doc, which is on Hulu. Why I'm a Vegan that Lindsay directed, which is also free. So, and then we also help produce other people's movies, usually about like environment, animal rights, climate, et cetera.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much. This is awesome. Really appreciate you guys.
Thank you, Caroline. This has been so fun.
Oh, hey, there's Bagel.
And there's Bagel. Bagel's on the Mobi Pod too.
Bagel, Bagel is the greatest living being. Like Bagel, we worship Bagel.
So Bagel, she's the patron saint.
She must have done good in her past lives. She hit the jackpot.
Okay. Well, great. It was really wonderful speaking with you. Thank you so much.
Appreciate you guys. Bye.
Okay, thanks, bye. Sharon.
I'm Stephanie J. Block.
And I'm Mary Lee Fairbanks.
And we host Stages Podcast. Binge close to 100 episodes. Hear the inside stories from backstage and behind the scenes as we go beyond the resume and into the heart of creativity and what it really takes to be in the business of show business.
Don't miss our chats with this season's Tony nominees. If you love theater and entertainment, you are going to love Stages Podcast.
Subscribe to Stages Podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts and visit us at stagespodcast.net.
Every week on Talk Easy with Sam Fragoso, I invite an artist, writer, or politician to come to the table and speak from the heart in ways you probably haven't heard from them before. Some of my favorites are with Tom Hanks, Questlove, and Cate Blanchett. In recent weeks, I talked to actor Dan Levy, director Ava DuVernay, and the editor of The New Yorker, David Remnick. You can listen to Talk Easy on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce.
Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.